Hello, welcome to another episode of Mic'd Up. This one's season 3, episode 8. We talk about rebounding from failures, and we appreciate everybody who comes to see us live on LinkedIn so that they can contribute and ask questions. It's typically at 2 p.m. Eastern.
And of course, I'm at 11 a.m. Pacific time in currently sunny San Diego.
Topic today is really rebounding through failure. So we are a little bit later today because we purposely failed our show right at 2 p.m. Eastern. And now we're rebounding here at 2:20. So interesting timing for us to talk about this. And we thought this was important. We didn't have any guests scheduled today. We do have a strong lineup coming up. George, CEO of City Lending, is coming up next week. Michael Brady, CIO of Leader One, I believe the week after. We have a gentleman who's been very high up in the real estate industry who will be joining our show, Russ. More information on him. Bill Lohman at APM will be on here. And then we have a very jam-packed September with some capital markets people. I keep thinking that's far out, but we are already in August. So it's right around the corner here.
Should be a good month considering we got Western Secondary coming up in a week and a half over in Rancho Palos Verdes in Los Angeles, part of California, Western Secondary. I'm excited to see our colleagues out there at Western Secondary with the appointments I have set up to meet and greet. Maybe we'll get some snippets for our show.
Yeah, we should have more following from Secondary. We're talking about innovation in the future, and product is going to be a big part of that. And
yeah,
always a well-attended event out there.
Yeah. By the way, we out here in San Diego, I'm not an official attendee, but I'm planning at least on checking out who's going to be showing up for Digital Mortgage in San Diego. So I'm going to come. That's also in September too, by the way.
Yeah, that one's really close to the New England Mortgage Bankers, which, you know, I'm very involved in. So if it was in Vegas, like last year, it put me down as a maybe 6-hour cross-country flight to get back in time. Just much harder to do, especially time zones going forward are always harder than backwards. So you put me in a conference out there, I can leave here at 12 and I can still be there for the morning session. Coming back, you know, you leave at 6 and you won't be in until, you won't make it that day, maybe the evening event, right? So
Roger that.
It's very difficult, but the Digital Mortgage Conference always attracts the larger players trying to do big changes, I think, in customer service because they actually have the money to invest in not just software, but teams to handle that software.
Yeah, this year should be really interesting. You know, AI seems to be a topic. Artificial intelligence seems to be a topic that's not just in the mortgage industry. You know, it's on so many people's minds when it comes to, you know, what is it that we can use it for to mitigate risk, to create better marketing, to do more business. I mean, it's on the forefront of so much change, and that, you know, I find that this year should be pretty interesting, at least getting a gauge of what people are going to be talking about and so on. I think that there's going to be some change in the corporate structure of how certain companies are working because it moves so fast.
Yeah, I'll give you an example. So I have a really cool client, Sapiens Decision, that allows you to take decision models and have them live within a place where you can no code. I mean, it builds the code, but in an environment where you don't need coding experience to begin to take your flows, charts, and also your decision checklists and put them in a place that can create a decision tree in a mortgage language that somebody can look at and say, oh, we have a problem here because we still need to have exceptions or not for this part of the product or this part of our process. What it's taught me, and I think what you're hinting at, is none of these companies have a role of who's in charge of the decisioning at the company, or a plan around the fact that decisioning models are becoming assets because you can go and call them. So when we ask this really, really large lender, and IMB, was actually in the process of acquiring others. So you're putting together a lot of checklists that sit in cubicles put up there, right? But all go up to the one piece, which is how do you identify risk within a product so that you can have more opportunity? Oh, this person handles those rules in Encompass. Our secondary really does a lot of those rules in PPE. So they'll shut off that program if they don't want it. Our underwriter sometimes helps with those rules. There's nobody in charge of a rule governance. And I find it interesting. And I think it will be a big shift because it's an iPhone moment for everybody I've introduced it to. Like everything I do, it's harder to get somebody on the initial meeting. And then when they get on any of my meetings, they see why most of the adopt the brand stuff is, oh, well, I never. And even that CEO said, you know, I don't think we do have any decision in governance really in our, it's all relied upon by a mixture of each vendor is in charge of that governance. And why it's relevant is it's going to be easier to call that decision and bring it back to where you need to bring it and let the software either make the right decision or prevent you from making the wrong decision. But it's just very interesting to make, whether it's your condo rules, LTV rules, buy down rules, right? Pass when you should pull credit, because it's so costly now to pull credit. Can you make decisions, better decisions during the process of when you should be pulling credit? All of these are decisions that can become decision models. And this is what the GSEs do. That whole DUDLP is they're calling out to decision modelers. What company they use, one thing. But that's just one big taking binders and turning them into decision models. Back to your point, though, things are going to change on who's in charge of what.
Yep. I consider, you know, the topic of today's show, rebounding from failure, considering what has happened over the course of the last 2 years from seeing a really low interest rate environment. And then all of a sudden, the Fed raising rates, mortgage rates going up, layoffs and dropped incomes and dropped commissions and drop units for sale and so on and so forth. I feel like that, you know, back in the 90s, you know, when we first started using decision-making processes, like FICO scores were being introduced, and then DU and LP got introduced, it went from everybody was handwriting 1003s to all of a sudden brokers were using Point, and then, you know, Countrywide had they didn't have H2L. I forget what it was called, but that's Plaza. But it was just like, you know, you had all these different LOSs, and they're still out there right now. So I feel like right now we are in like the first grade level of the mortgage industry right now. And the reason I say that is because as we try and discuss, and I always use the word try because try means that you have this willingness and understanding of failure, that we're not really rebounding from failure per se. We just keep growing. And I think if we have the willingness to reframe where we're at, that is really where we have the ability to rebound from what is perceived failure to just the aspect of business and sales growth. And I think that when we're doing this, so, you know, over the course of your career, Mike, you know, I want to segue into talking about you. And if you want, we can talk about me as well. It's a little bit scary talking about the beginning part when you're at the beginning stages, just because you're like, oh, I didn't produce enough sales. Oh, I didn't, you know, I didn't make any phone calls. Oh, I didn't have an appointment. Da, 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 da. But I think, you know, how do you think you defined, how do you define failure? I want to ask you that question. Do you consider like failure truly failure, or is it just a black swan event every single time, or is it something that you think that you can get something from?
So I'm able to motivate myself by using failure as a motivation to keep pushing on and addressing to myself, you have learned so much through that failure. You are a better person. You are a better person for this obstacle in front of you because of those failures. I believe I've done a good job over the years, especially because failure to me has always trickled in. It wasn't overnight. A big black swan event happened. The rates went way up. This happened at least for the last decade. I mean, I've had where the whole world sort of turned upside down, but I'm always able to say we got to wake up the next day. We got to move on. And there's two ways to handle it. We can either look at us and say, yeah, in the mirror, you know, you're a failure. You could have done it differently. Or I like to think I am now better than my competitors or better than my peers in this area because that process of failing, I put in hundreds of hours, you know, or maybe not a lot more hours than the average person in that journey. And so therefore I am a lot more hours of real world experience, better off than most of the people I'm going to run into. And that's been how I've really been able to handle this piece of being innovative, entrepreneurial, pushing ahead, sacrificing short-term wealth for long-term gains, and then betting the farm, as you will, on pieces that really didn't pay off.
Right. So for our listeners that are out there right now, last week we talked about podcasts. And the main, if you could get one thing from that, from last week's episode, I'm going to say the Nike mantra, it's just do it. And so what Mike is saying right here that I'm leaning from is from the past two seasons of shows, as we've interviewed various leaders of the mortgage industry, one thing that they have consistently done is consistently work and consistently achieve and consistently manifest the type of things they need to do in order to achieve that position of leadership, either in sales or the development of business or the creation of. And you don't get to that point of the creation of or the manifestation or the doing without doing multiple tasks, without doing multiple calls, without making multiple meetings, without making multiple. Greg Cardone talks about 10xing everything. And that's just not 10xing your business, your income, and your life. It's also 10xing the activities that you have to go through as well. So knowing that, Mike, what are, you know, you when you can touch the topic of mindset on changing yourself, but what are some of the things that you thought, hey, you weren't doing before and you needed to either 2x, 3x, or 10x in order to rebound from what wasn't working to turn it to something that does work?
If I'm hearing the question, I think the toughest part about failing is not ending up in that casino-like mindset where you are so far in the hole that you need to win double or nothing, triple or nothing, and you make wrong decisions. If anything, I look at failure now as the great reset. And if I could start again, just try not to make those mistakes. So with easy mortgage apps, you know, there was so many mistakes that I learned as a loan officer turned into running and creating an industry. And not by myself, like we had peers, but we were always undermanned in, I believe, what we were trying to tackle. And pride sometimes gets in the way. Sometimes you can fuel off of it, but it also leads to areas where it prevents you from delegating. So that would be the first failure at Easy Mortgage Apps. It was very difficult to find the drive to scale because it was always that next obstacle, or I should say next sale in front of us that needed to be made to survive the week, the month. But we were like holding sand or grabbing more sand, and it just kept going through our hands in hindsight. At the time, we were grabbing more sand than everybody else, and pride had it, you know, had us happy. I'd say on the other side of pride, that was one of the tougher parts of failure. I think the failure of Easy Mortgage Apps is one perception of metrics that other people put upon it that it did not, or just put upon any tech startup, and it never hit the metrics that people call success. And then I started to buy into, okay, it wasn't a success, and never really marketed it as the success it was. So it had 32,000 loan officers on it, It had $500 billion of loans go through it. That is something to be proud of, right? But it did not exit. And the lenders that I, on the Pride side, that I said as I was forming this market, you're going to regret it. You're not going to, you know, another vendor really took the baton and took it there. And it's the pride of like, they were right. They rode my wave and then went on to that wave and did just fine. And I was wrong in telling them that. I should have never said to them, but I wholeheartedly believe. And at that time we were ahead, and I don't think the other company would have done half the stuff they did if we didn't motivate them, like the old WCW, WWF rivalry. Like when you have a challenger doing well, you start to step it up. Yeah, I think those, and then letting down, and I'm sure the mortgage industry went through this a lot in the recent downturn, but those people that work for you, if you're somebody that leads from the front with motivating them and you know they're, I guess the biggest difference is a lot of people sacrificed a lot because they saw in me sacrificing a lot at this vision that we were really going to do it. And we did it from what I just explained, but the reason they joined was obviously, and I'm guessing a monetary outcome. The reason that I'm now at the table down, have to double up, is the monetary outcome. Maybe the biggest failure is not knowing when to pull that parachute, but innovators and thought leaders and people that push the barrier and create categories like mobile app, they typically aren't the ones that pull the parachute too early. So
do you think that you ever saw during that time period, even with all the good, some of the good stuff that you had, you know, and completing closed sales, and then maybe, in dark times like we've been over the course of the last 2 years, did you ever look there and go, yes, it's bad, or, you know what, we don't have as much as we want. However, I'm going to motivate myself to do this, but I can see where the end is. And if you were to ask yourself that question, and then answer it, I can, and say, I know where the end is, and say, it's going to happen when rates go down, employment gets better, housing listings are increasing. And as a result, there may be more possibility for purchase transactions versus refinance transactions. Did you ever sit there and go, these are not black swan events, but these are the events that could cause us to get more business?
I'll say I'm a little different in we did not have any A round, angel investing, VC, you know, I certainly would go out with Dex and certainly put a nice salary in there. But because we never had it, I personally never had any successes that would cause me to even take a vacation. So not only was it personal that we are going to win, and I think that was probably part of the failure, is I had goals, but the goals were sales metrics more than they were SaaS-based tier-up metrics. Like where are we going, I guess, is the problem. The other problem we had is we had multiple partners in the company. So at different points, as the journey got longer, what each person saw was the next step, created some noise and confusion for potential investors. But at the end of the day, I lived and felt that failure every month, right? Looking at my own P&L, and you could tell at times, almost every time, we were going to need help. It's just, how can you separate yourself from the business to go out there and find the right help? Because when you're dealing with equity, you're worried about that failure too. Like, you worked so hard for all this, you're only gonna be able to give away the slices so much. What if you give it to the wrong person? And so you end up not giving it to anybody and failing. So, you know, that's another area.
And, you know, we've talked to a lot of leaders, and one of the, a few times I've mentioned in a few shows that some of these presidents or leaders have stayed in their lane. you know, whether it was concentrated on USDA loans, whether it was concentrated on a certain type of loan officer productivity, or the leader would stay in their lane, but he would allow his, he would delegate the duties to those who know what they're doing. And you know, I think that it's hard for us to be able to either delegate or even stay in our lane. I think there's too many time for salespeople. They got like eight, they're like ADD, like all over the place. We're just like, oh, look at this. Oh, look at the shiny object syndrome comes into play and so on and so forth. What is one or two things that you might be able to say that helps you stay in your lane when it comes to either the delegation of duties or B, staying focused on behalf of your clients?
Most of the Easy Mortgage App story, that failure was not staying in our lane. Like, we built a servicing app that actually FICS users, which is typically somebody that has like 12,000 people paying their mortgage, they could go in and give a code. Like, it worked. And why we built that, you know, is as big a part of a failure as it is a cool success story. We built StreetLinks app for them, which was part of Assurant at the time. And so we really built it for Assurant, which was the only external piece they did since 1962, you know, Dow 500 company. And it was because mobile was so difficult. Contract sort of went to where it was not beneficial. And again, just a pure distraction from that retail play that now looking back, that's all we want to be, right? So we were the darlings of the prom in the sense of we could make mobile apps and nobody else even had a plan around it. And we got distracted from who we were or our best pathway forward. And yeah, I mean, I always look, I think that was the best lesson I've learned out of here. It's not some MBA workbook on, in our industry, I should say, not some business review workbook on like, that's the right answer. I lived it and learned the hard way, like the slap on the wrist. Don't do that again. Don't do that again. So I try and just stay focused on not picking up any new clients in my, at least at Adopt the Brand until all, I feel like all my clients are ROI positive. Like, that's my goal with them is, can I ROI positive them on their meetings, their sales? Can I spend my free time figuring out how to scale and delegate through automation? I've always been bullish on auto outreach. And I wish I wasn't bootstrapped and could just pay somebody to help me sort of build that. But until then, most of my extra time, if we're not working on this, is on YouTube trying to figure out how to auto outreach. Because whether I'm trying to get new clients, whether loan officers are trying to create new connections, whether our podcast is trying to create new subscribers, it typically starts with, while you sleep, engagements occurring, right? So, and we failed there. Like, I think it's not as, it's always on the top of my mind. If you don't have a marketing data strategy, and if you can't afford it, you should constantly refresh it in your book and just have it, like the to-do list. But I don't know how any mortgage vendor or any mortgage lender trying to reach customers is doing it without a real hard look at how they're going to automate and analyze their metrics on outbound outreach. And I wouldn't just keep it to marketing, because those metrics, everybody in every business are going to ask for. And the more polished you are at them and the more you have them, the more opportunity is going to come to you. But at the same time, the less you'll be distracted, because you can look at those numbers and decide where your distraction is, not just go on gut instinct. Because when things start moving fast, you do a lot of gut instinct. And if you're successful, you're like, you're right a lot on your gut. So you follow it, and then you accidentally follow it into a dead end. You follow it into a valley, and your competitor took a ladder over it. And so now you had the lead, and now you're playing catch up. Did a lot of that.
So to summarize all of that, if you are in sales, if you're an originator or even a leader, there's two lessons and everything that Mike just broke down. Number one, know when you're in your own way and know when to get out of your own way and then accept that you got in your own way so that you know how to step aside and allow those who are in your circle of influence or in your employment or those who may be in ancillary service to say, you know what, this is how I'm going to get out of my way so that I can move forward. Because if, you know, we don't know what we don't know, meaning that we're always, we're so geared into what we're, what we've already done successfully. That's when we get our own way. And we're stuck in, you know, we could be here, but we're stuck here, and this could be comfortable. But in order to get here, there's that discomfort in between. And in order for us to be able to move from one point to another, we can see what's going up here, but yet we don't get out of our own way. Why? Because we're so comfortable here. And I think one of the things I'm hearing from you is that the lesson that you're learning is that you're not just able to understand what's going on. You're also able to currently translate that in seeing what you've already done in some of the learning lessons. You can call them failures if you want, Mike, but really learning lessons, the preschool learning lessons, translate that into the service providers that you're, that we're working with, Sapiens or Silverworks or any number of some of the adopt a brand clients that you're working with right now, and then say, okay, if you're here and you want to get to here, can you see the noise that's stopping you from going from here to here? Can you hear it? Can you see it? And are you willing to get uncomfortable with some change in order to reach that level? And so with that, Mike, what are some of the things that you had to commit to get uncomfortable to create that change? Because it's one thing to motivate yourself, but like, what are some of the most uncomfortable things? Is it okay if I ask that question?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. What is some, or name one thing that you think was so uncomfortable? Tell me a story of when you felt uncomfortable about doing something, but you committed to doing anything, and whether it was successful or not, it was irrelevant, but you decided to make the maneuver.
I mean, early on, one of my partners was my boss and a very, you know, a mentor to me, Paul, and just a strong figure. And I was the one making the outbound calls, and I was the one going to the conferences, and he was handling the operations of the company. And he was always at the old company we were at, the president, right? And I was a young loan officer trying to make a name in town. So at some point I realized these lenders, like we're talking to CEOs of top 300 lenders, they really need to see me as president or CEO of this company if I'm going out there and meeting with them. So that was an example of an uncomfortable conversation that I probably put off, you know, a couple months, and then creates more opportunity for failure because it wasn't just the title that came with it. It was like the lenders had to believe that I was running it because what I was telling them out there was a vision. I was selling more of a vision than a result. Like Easy Mortgage Apps was a better way for a better customer experience. For example, we created the Domino's Pizza Tracker before Domino's Pizza Tracker created. So, and now everybody raves about, you know, in mortgage, you'll hear podcasts. We called it the Domino's Pizza Tracker. We actually had it in mortgage, and the Easy Mortgage Apps had it before Domino's had it. So it's telling them that's a better customer experience. Customers would prefer that. Them saying no, they would prefer hearing from our loan officers. Me saying, look, I have a vision that when I started in 2013, I remember saying the average person looked at their phone about 60 to 90 minutes a day. By like 2015, the average person was already up to 2 hours and 40 minutes. And I had snippets, and so I knew we were onto something. Like, people are spending 2 hours of their day looking at this. Now, we weren't wrong. Just quick plug. Still think the mobile strategies, like everybody should be reaching out to me at a lender, because the average person's looking at it about 9 hours a day. That's a pretty insane phenomenon that did not happen 12 years ago. Nobody looked at anything for 9 hours a day. Now they're pulling out of their pocket, staring at it. They had to believe that my vision was, okay, I'm going to make everything on this phone. Whether my partners were part of it or not, they had to believe I was the one doing it because I'm the one shaking their hand. I'm the one calling them. And so that was an uncomfortable conversation saying, look, I need to be president now. And, you know, Paul was good with it, but it was also a really successful company at that point. Like we were signing up 3 people a month. So it wasn't like, hey, it's a dead dog. So we're going to try, instead of you being president, me being president. So that made it uncomfortable too. A lot of it was uncomfortable when we started like losing money, right? You know, you borrow money when you're in a tech startup. And when you borrow it from amateurs, they believed in why they lent it to you, but they don't understand that there is a chance you might lose it. So going back to those people and not getting the same response that you read in those tech magazines, like, oh, they're just going to say 4 out of 10 fail and the other 6 make it. No, they're like, that's my money. Like, what do you mean it's not working? And it's like, I tried everything in my power. I think that you said, just do work, show up. I always was able to justify failure because I outworked how, what I would expect out of somebody if I gave up my work or gave up a couple of years of my career. If I gave up money, this to me is like somebody that definitely didn't take it for granted, worked their butt off. And I don't know if I can fault them. If anything, maybe the investors should have reached out more and said, how can we get what I still feel is missing is the people. So like, to me, that was where the failure was our inability to bring on more the right people to get it to where it was supposed to go. And I say it's a money thing, but it's, I will say we didn't have enough money to prove it wasn't just me wanting more control. But I think I've always loved mentors. I think I would have taken on more. But when you start doing well, everybody, the bad ones know how to inch their way in and be around you and warm up to you, hoping you choose them as their mentor. But they really just want this cushy, you know, consultant-like job. So you got to be, you'll get a lot of those too when you create something great.
So, you know, when I hear the story of your event, of what you experienced was and some of the things you think you may have failed at, I see a lot of reaching out. I see a lot of talking. I see a lot of kind of visualizing, seeing where you're going. And I would say that for any, whether you are an originator attempting to talk to, you know, realtors, financial advisors, trust attorneys, or whoever your ancillary referral source would be, or whether you're an ancillary service like title, escrow, appraisal, or AMC, or some other service. There's a common thread in all of that, right? It's on one side of all of our fears of failure is one thing. But when we get to the other side, it wasn't the success of getting the meeting and it wasn't the success of just closing the sale. It actually became the success of creating connection. And I can, not only do I see it and not only can I visualize it, but I hear it in the social media posts, right? Because if people begin to recognize you, Mike, at the shows, and that's because you created connection. And through those connections is how we can create closed business. And I think the visualization we have is instead of having this, you know, we're just coming out of this pandemic. Where 50% of American citizens that are out there right now, they're talking about being lonely, being depressed, being in a hybrid environment. We even see hybrid environments right now. You could be a doc drawer, you could be an underwriter, you can be even an originator, and you're doing everything by telephone, right? But you're looking at the money because you're desperate for money, but that was just the vehicle, and not realizing that you're really looking to create connection. And when you create more sales, not only does it create the connection, it also creates that success. And that with that comes that money. And with that connection also, it has the potential of creating not only a connection in your business and with your ancillary sources, but maybe if creating connection with your family would be part of it. That's all part of the deal because everybody's on the train with you in success.
Yeah, I would say the hardest part about failure might be the fact that the best part of what I did at Easy Mortgage Apps and what other people will do when they actually truly create something, they're building something. So if you're a loan officer, that's one. If you're building your own, before the app, I created my own networking groups because I couldn't afford BNI and I loved Rotary. So I said, why don't I take BNI, but we will do service above self type items. And we built it up to like 11 chapters in Massachusetts of 10. So we had about 110 members that met in similar format. That's building something. Like if you can get up and build, then the actual process is what I'm saying, becomes more fun than when you actually reach the goal. Because when you look back on it, because all your memories are while you were building, less of them are that one day where you celebrate that you accomplished it. The problem with failure is when you're all done and you have 12 years worth of stories, it's hard to find somebody that wants to hear them, that has a, especially in a niche world like loan officer or mortgage tech vendor. I'm not a forest firefighter where the stories are that fascinating, except to people like me, they are beyond fascinating. And when the end is the failure, the audience is just harder to find. Where the end is a success, it's like, oh, tell me how you created a $1 billion company. You might say no. I mean, maybe on podcasts people want to listen, but around a Thanksgiving Day table, it'll put people to sleep faster than tryptophan. So my grandfather always said, everybody loves a winner, Michael. So you got to show where you won. And then they'll love to hear the stories. And that's the hard part about failure too. It's like you have this bottled full of great milestones and accomplishments that you did with your coworkers and everything. And yeah, I'll say one more thing. Like I understand the journey and how many valuable pieces we could take out of it to apply it to different areas. I have seen people that work for me over the years that just, and obviously they're made a little different, but bottle it up as just a failure. And I try to tell them, no, you have learned more than any business school. With Easy Mortgage, you were hands-on. You were talking to some of the most CEOs of people that put 10,000 people in a home a year, was just talking to you directly. You were doing project management. You were doing this. They relied on all their customers, were touching something that you were in charge of every day. This is what you got to take out of the journey. The failure is just, most failures are like, I guess two things, money driven and two in relationship to competitors. So yes, we didn't have the exit people expect out of a piece. And therefore, yes, we owe the investors still waiting to, for that exit. And then two is, so-and-so, I mean, people know who I would say, but so-and-so is who everybody uses today. They don't use you anymore. That's really the only two failures. Everything else was a giant success. Now, that's how I look at it. Obviously, you have to look at it that way. Otherwise, why'd you keep doing it? So that's some of my takeaway there.
I Mike, I sent you a text earlier this morning and it said, when we share our joy, it multiplies. And when we share our burdens, the weight divides. And I love that when we have conversations, you're telling me, oh yeah, talk to this person, shared this and da 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 da, success. And then sometimes when we have conversations about, I didn't talk to this other person, or this person didn't want to do, ended up not doing something or whatever. It's not that we're commiserating with each other, but we realize and we understand that we can share our joy, we can share our failures or our lack we didn't get the appointment, we didn't get the meeting, or we didn't close the business or whatever. But the burden becomes released. And I think if you're an originator and you're sitting there going, well, yeah, I don't have enough realtor connections, I don't have enough financial advisor connections, I didn't do a podcast. I didn't do marketing, or I don't know how I did it, but it didn't work. And I think that it's, you know, it's just like when you decide, I didn't have the money for BNI, I decided to go to Rotary, and all of a sudden, boom, you know, you're with other people that are sharing your successes. It's not, you know, this business of real estate, whether it's in mortgage originations or ancillary services, title, escrow, appraisal, we all share the same burdens on a financial level, on a business level, on a units produced level. I think it's the perspective of knowing, do we have the willingness to go to the other side? And I think that when last week we talked about the podcast and just doing it, the other side is just having these types of conversations and knowing that it doesn't have to cost a ton of money, but what you do have to do is you have to go do it. And then number two, you have to be consistent in creating more opportunities so that it's not about creating just failure experiences. It's also about creating your experience and your story so that you can actually create tools to divide the burdens of weight that are on your shoulders financially. And having the type of connections that we have, Mike, on our show and in the way that we've been able to network with people and produce business, I think a lot of weights are, I mean, of course, you know, they say that, you know, more units, more deals, more calls, closed deals, that eliminates all the problems. But we have to be able to share our burdens and put a little bit of weight on it. But as we continue this sales journey that we're on, whether you're a leader of an IMB or whether you are a salesperson, we just know that we're just moving on these experiences so that we can move forward. I appreciate that we've been able to do this on our podcast.
Yeah, and just to take it to the loan officer world, because it's clear that's where you want this to go. This message for loan officers. What you were saying is now is the time to create groups, find. I would use Eventbrite or believe there's another meetup. There's another one like that. Meetup. Yeah. And you just on Meetup, there are people that are passionate about what they do. And if you can create groups, be consistent, like you heard last week on our podcast, you need to get in front of people and you need to almost be the most consistent out of all of them. And find people that you can be around weekly that are relevant. Even if they're loan officers and they're somewhat competitive, go in knowing you're going to outlast them. And that is where a lot of the business I believe will come from in the future. And when I look back on what I did, it was like at night I planted the seeds. At night I softened the sand, if you will. And then during the day, I would do the behaviors, the activities needed to win. So it's like if you have these groups at night, you got to bring more people to these groups. If you're a loan officer, do a group about sustainable housing. But just make sure the people that are there are good at email marketing, like things that will contribute to your scalability. You don't want somebody there that is, you feel, draining the room and making the walls come in, I suppose. You want everybody there that is bursting sunlight out those windows and is building more windows, and the light can go as far as you can see. At night, you should be trying to recruit those, no matter what they do. Maybe they are into computers. That's fine. Their skill set might be the ability to use Clay and Smart Lead and teach them how you guys can work together in mortgage and get that out there. There's too much information out there to find these people. If you're stuck in a rut, I mean, start putting together these little groups, start leading these little groups, and know it's going to be a consistency game. And watch this time next year what happens. It's the same thing applies to call 10 more realtors and 10 more of this. The problem is everybody's doing that right now. Sometimes you have to be a little bit different in order to get the passion fire in here and believe in it. And you'll find just, I think, through osmosis, if you're out there doing it, more good things happen. And that's what I always did with Easy Mortgage Apps. That's part of how Adopt the Brand all of a sudden is where it is continuing to talk and be there and But at the same time, you know, the failure of last time was, I think, not bringing in more people, because people make the business, right? People that would win. And so this time it's, how can I start making enough to save enough to bring in the people to do whatever that is the next time? But it's certainly not going back to something where I am just limited to 9 to 5. And I think that's how I cope with failure. It's, if I now lost and now I have to just cope with 9 to 5 to have a retirement, it would hurt. But the fact that I'm still able to keep building, I just say, look, you learned this and now look at your skill set. You should be able to build something bigger and better now. Go do it.
Can you believe it's almost been an hour? This has been really great. I think this type of show just isn't just for originators. It's also for anybody that's in mortgage services, sales too. And even more importantly, it's for when you are the leader of an operation. I'm not just going to say if you're a CEO of an IMB, but also I'm going to say if you're the CEO of a mortgage team, meaning that you're a team of one, one originator or one salesperson is to just know that, number one, that there are other salespeople that are in here. So I think that, you know, when we're getting out, you know, next week is what, Western Secondary, or week after, I'm sorry. And, you know, you're going to be at New England. There's a digital mortgage and then mortgage coming up around the same time. And there's a lot of events. And I think that, you know, sometimes we just go out there and we're looking to get business. Sometimes we just want to see what's going on. But I think the most important part is to find out and start meeting people. You know, maybe instead of looking for the business, I mean, that of course is going to be the main goal, but it's also looking to ask questions to find success and the clues in this and that success, because it might be that you'll be getting referral business from the most unlikely of sources, because as a salesperson, you were willing to do a little bit more. There's a lot of captains of industry that are willing to do a little bit more. Mike, and I see it in the LinkedIn videos. I'm super happy that we did able to have conversations with them.
On your end, as we kind of come here to the top of the hour, the end of the hour, when you're a loan officer and you're switching from company to company, do you think that, do you fail? Is there a feeling of failure often that you failed that company in what you're able to do? Or do you think most people leaving, or in your case, do you feel the company kind of changed or you changed and that it's not a sign of, are there any failure remorse at that triggering of changing companies on either side? Like the company failed me or I failed the company?
Yeah. Most of the time I act like it's always the company's fault when leaving a company. But deep in my heart, I feel like I failed, because I remember multiple times, back in the heydays of the early 2000s, when everybody was doing 20, 30 loans a month, or it seemed like everybody was doing 20, 30 loans a month, I was getting recruited and so on and so forth. I felt like if I were to leave whichever organization I was at right now, or when I did leave an organization, I felt like, I was angry. They didn't processing or whatever, ancillary services or not enough leads or whatever. But it was really like, I didn't do enough. I didn't do enough lead origination. I didn't do enough introspection, self-discovery to make everybody's position better so that I didn't have to leave. And I would say I would still say that even in my current position, I would still feel the same way, that I might be angry at other people, or the perception may be that I may be angry with other people or disappointed or whatever the situation could be. But I still take it personally that maybe I just didn't do enough in leadership, in activities, or in attitude.
Thank you for sharing that. And I think that's very normal. And usually, especially in sales, it is going to come down to when things are going really well, you're almost too busy to reflect on if it's going good or bad. So when it starts to slow down, that's usually when somebody leaves a company and naturally they think the slowdown is not the market, but somehow they're something their employer did. Do you find the industry has failed loan officers by not offering pathways for careers or career enhancements and just making them believe, like in the tech world, I said the outcomes were either you have an exit or your competitor is, you know, you beat your competitor, your competitor beat you. Is that similar to loan officers and they're so sales driven that it's you made President's Club or you're the better loan officer in the town? Is there a way to feel like it isn't a failure? Or have they done anything in the career to where you could feel like your journey with that company isn't a failure if you didn't sell well?
Oh, you're on a slippery rope there, Mike. I honestly believe right now
every company but the ones that employed you.
My goodness. I honestly believe that half the originators that are out there, and this is a reduced bunch of originators that are out there across the United States, we're down, 60 or 70% of where we were a few years ago. I honestly believe half of them are in the wrong spot. Whether they're a broker and they should be retail, whether they're retail, they should be a broker, or whether they're retail and they're in the wrong retail organization, whether they're a broker and they're in the wrong broker organization, I don't really think over half of them know themselves well enough to be at the right company.
I could see that. The industry doesn't really have a strategy around slowdown. Like, Michael, you're really good with first responders and you're doing 12 deals a month. We'd rather you do six. You're going to love the culture over here. Do six and treat them really, really good. And we're going to have these new incentive packages for these firehouses and these police stations. And we're really just going to lean in on being a culture play. If you're doing 12, you're not the person they're going to pick, right? They're like, we need you at, how can we get you to 16? Can we give you an LOA? You know, what can we do? Fast forward 6 months, the 12, 14, 16 are your metrics for success or failure, not if you had taken the blue pill and went the other way. Not that that exists, but I think
the culture, falsehood, right? the lie that originators who are in retail or brokers too, by the way, the lie that originators tell themselves is that their employer, the broker of record or their managers that have capital markets and so on, the lie they tell themselves is that the company is earning more and they're not earning enough. That is, when we a few weeks ago when we had the rep from NAREP
on, yeah, Jason,
yeah, and I, Jason Rivera, I said, and the comment I said to him, I said, you know, it's so funny, you know, that the average originator, the really good ones, you know, they're not earning 80% or 125 basis points because they get it right away because with their LOAs and their systems and their marketing, they're back at 40 bips. Yes, they're doing maybe 10, 15, 20 units a month, but they're not earning 80% or 125 bips because after all their expenses, they're like at 45% or 45 bips. And he laughed and goes, that's so true.
I have a kind of a bomb I can drop here for those that listen to the whole episode. I've been holding on to you for about 2 weeks. I just haven't had a chance to tell. Maybe I told you, Mike, I forgot, but I didn't tell you on the show. Very well-informed source, very influential in the industry on the lender side, informed me that the CFPB is having conversations about a universal LO comp piece, and that is a possibility. More than, I haven't heard anybody report it out there in LinkedIn world, or it could be behind closed doors. I won't give up my sources, but something to think about, not something for us to have a show on yet, because we don't want to put it into...
No, not yet. I would disagree so hard with that. I mean, it's bad enough that NAR has a settlement and, you know, whatever compensation buyer's agents are supposed to be getting and so on and so forth. I mean, that's kind of a whole bunch of whatever. Buyers are going to get paid no matter what anyway. But to completely socialize, oh man, okay, let's not go down that road. But to completely like make everything uniform, well, it when absolutely clear that a smaller independent mortgage banker, because of the less volume that they do, right? Costco is going to buy at a cheaper price versus mom and pop small shop. And I think that because the larger organizations have cheaper accessibility or less costly opportunity to sources of money. And also, they have an opportunity of scalability when it comes to processing doc jars and ancillary sources and vendors and so on and so forth. It becomes somewhat of an uneven playing field. Although, and at that point, would it still be fair to say one company is earning more than another? Still not fair to say that, only because the originator is not maybe at the right shop. But boy, when we get there and we talk about the CFPB and we can have a show about that, Mike, hopefully we have a guest to have some discussion about that.
Yeah, we won't touch that. We have some good guests for the foreseeable future. I think everybody's worried about NAR for the foreseeable future. The CFPB has to go maybe through an administration change, maybe not with their independence, but they are highly focused on junk fees, and some of what they're doing is good. Some of what they're doing is classic CFPB, you know, blog about it and just throw people in a whirlwind and words against the wall. We'll see, but they're clearly cutting down junk fees. And if they think it's a junk fee,
I want to have an anonymous poll on LinkedIn. Would you like to see Mark Calabria as head of the CFPB?
After listening to him on Real Talk Fridays,
yes,
I liked him a lot more after that conversation. I felt he was much more human after listening to that than just a regulator, right? Like he talked about how he has seen 2008 firsthand, how he had the two cooks, I think, that were at where he was working come in and show they owned four homes and what they were supposed to do. And like, you're going to lose all four. He has a good heart, or it's coming from the right place. He just believes, the other piece was just how much he believes the GSEs should be profitable because they're in bankruptcy, and those LLPAs, you know, if that's what they need to be profitable, then that's, they should have them. So I think that's a little bit where it's differed, but he thinks, you know, that it shouldn't be a handout. And that was, I'd listen to it almost again and take notes. Like, that's how good that interview was. And
yeah, maybe we should do like what they do on social media where, you know, he's talking on the Real Talk and then we're kind of, we just put our little comments on the side. Oh yeah, by the way.
Keep pointing. Yeah. maybe we'll get there. Thank you.
Great show, by the way.
Yeah. Great show.
Thank you.
Tune in next week. We have some great guests coming up. I still can't believe Bill Lohman now is in 2 weeks. August 22nd felt so far out, so long, and now it's right around the corner. Thank you again for tuning in to Mic'd Up Show. Please visit us at mic'duppshow.com, mic'duppshow.com, to follow us on Spotify, YouTube, Amazon, Apple Podcasts. Now, if you can give us a review, not just 5 stars, if you give us a review, and I see you out there, we'll send you some swag. We'll feature you on our LinkedIn. We'll give you a thank you. We'll feature you on our Mic'd Up Show. We'll give you a big five-star treatment if you give us a 5-star. Thank you.
Yeah, and maybe you might give them a hug too.
Maybe.